Greetings from Norway. This is Sermon on the Mount K on oaths and on non-resistance. Last time we looked at lust, and although we didn't explore what Jesus said about divorce, I gave you a suggestion and a link you can follow to learn more. So Jesus has already addressed the sixth and seventh commandments from the Ten Commandments about murder and adultery. And now he swings around to the third commandment of not taking the name of the Lord in vain. Exodus 20, verse 7. So, let's read our first text, Matthew 5, 33, 37. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. In the ancient world, as in the modern world, people lie, they deceive, they're untrustworthy. It's probably one of the main reasons we need contracts. We need oaths taken in a legal setting. If someone goes to court, he has to give some elaborate promise instead of simply speaking the truth. That should never, of course, be necessary for a Christian because we always speak the truth. One ancient writer of the Romans said, see the assurance of his deceitful face. He swears by the rays of the sun, the Tarpeian thunderbolts, and the spear of Mars. Mars, the god of war. You're swearing by the spear of Mars. It's like when Muslims today swear by the beard of Muhammad, or others say, I swear on my mother's grave. And very often when people use that kind of language, it's because they're not telling the truth, right? We really shouldn't need to swear by anything if we're men and women of integrity. Now, many people incorrectly think that the third commandment is a prohibition of profanity, that taking the Lord's name in vain is if you say Jesus or something like that. And I'm not saying we should use the word Jesus or God or related terms flippantly, but biblical scholars don't think that's what this is. The third commandment is about swearing by God when you're actually being dishonest, or maybe using the name of God in magic rites. You're trying to control the future. That's, of course, is a strong biblical no-no. So it's about using God's name in promises that we don't intend to keep. So how about us? When it comes to oaths, do we need to swear? Is my word my bond? I mean, sometimes it's just a handshake. I mean, if we shook on it, that's it. It doesn't need to be in writing. I know we live in a world where you can't buy a car. You can't buy a house just saying, look, I promise to make the payments. But we shouldn't need to have paperwork and the threat of the law because Christians keep their word. Some more questions for thought. Do people trust me when it comes to my integrity? Do I respect deadlines? Do I respect time tags? If I say I'll do something by a certain time, do I do it? Am I punctual? Do I respect others enough to be on time? Do I come late to work? That is a form of stealing from the boss. Or do I leave early? Or do I turn the 1 hour lunch break into an hour and 20 minutes? Do I complete assignments? If I'm a student, do I aim to please the Lord Christ? Colossians 3:24. Am I determined in terms of integrity to be an exemplary Christian student or Christian worker? These are the kinds of applications that come from this passage. But we don't swear. We don't take oaths. And Jesus is quite clear about that. I like the line, don't take an oath by your head. You cannot make one hair white or black. You know, that's certainly true. I can't, but I can do both. I got both colors. We should learn from history. An early Christian source says, he who formerly made a law about swearing truthfully, and he forbade perjury, he has now, however, charged us not to swear at all. Okay, so perjury is when you swear and under oath. He says, we shouldn't even need the oath. Jesus' commandment was not just a new standard for the Jews. It was certainly a standard for the Gentiles. And even after The church started slipping fast under Constantine, 4th century. For many decades, Christians continued to obey Jesus' words about swearing, at least until the time of Augustine, say around the year 400. And our second passage for today's meditation continues on, 38 to 42. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you. Do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. This doctrine is often called the doctrine of non-resistance. Now, obviously, he's not saying we shouldn't resist evil. You know, do whatever anyone asks you. Say whatever comes to your mind. Be totally spontaneous. Don't make distinctions between right and wrong. He's not saying that. Non-resistance isn't just a doctrine promoted by Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. or in my home country, the Amish. This isn't non-resistance to evil. We always resist evil, but resistance of to evil people, like the Roman who might force you to carry his backpack 1 mile. In a way, you're shaming him when you insist on taking it a second mile. You're showing him your heart. And this is the way Jesus lived. Now, one of my friends who's has a great knowledge of the early church put it this way. Of course, the life of a Christian is one of continually resisting evil, but Jesus commands us not to resist evil through physically, earthly, carnal means. Instead, we resist evil through the power of love and holiness. Non-resistance is ultimately the way of love and the way of the cross, two things exemplified by Jesus. Non-resistance is one of the defining characteristics of the historic faith. But today, in the Christian world, hardly any churches practice non-resistance. And it's really not so much a doctrine as a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle where we're not demanding our rights. We're not using weapons to hurt other people. What was it like in the church of the first 3 centuries? Well, let's go back to Africa. Tertullian, if injured, we are forbidden to retaliate, lest we become just as bad ourselves. Who can suffer injury at our hands? So not retaliating. Now that, this isn't just by force of arms. It's also by speech. It could be sarcasm. It could be passive-aggressive comments. It could be slanders. There are lots of passages in both Testaments about what we say. Let's go north to what is today France. Irenaeus. Christians have beat their swords and their spears into plowshares and their pruning hooks for reaping grain, that is, into instruments useful for peaceful purposes. So now they are strangers to fighting. Why? When they are struck, they offer the other cheek also. Justin Martyr. The philosopher from Samaria. We used to be filled with war, mutual slaughter, and every kind of wickedness. However, now all of us have, throughout the whole earth, changed our warlike weapons. We have changed our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks. Now, this is referring to Isaiah 2 and Joel 3 and Micah 4, you know, those Old Testament passages. Now, does this mean being passive? No. The law prohibits private revenge. All right, we understand that. It's not the individual who should exact justice. But Jesus goes a step further and eliminates all revenge. Now, he's not nullifying the law. He's broadening it. He offers several illustrations, turning the cheek, your cloak, the tunic is like your shirt, the cloak would be like your jacket, and going the extra mile. So it may sound very passive or weak, but it's actually strong, and it gives the one being wronged the higher ground morally. Back to our expert. With his teaching of non-resistance, Jesus brings to a pinnacle much of what he has said up to this point in the Sermon on the Mount. The meek who inherit the earth are the non-resistant. Nobody can truly be pure in heart without being non-resistant. The peacemakers are the non-resistant who have first made peace with their own enemies. At the same time, nobody will be able to live a non-resistant life unless he's first learned how to control anger, tongue, and passions. And that's why Jesus gave his teachings on those other subjects before he introduced the concept of non-resistance. This is a hard teaching, and it's a teaching that will sound strange to many modern people, especially in the West. So did the early church really believe such an unusual doctrine? Yeah, I've got so much evidence. Let me just read some. We do not resist those who injure us. We yield to them. If we're injured, we bear it with calmness and moderation. We don't turn to revenge. When we're provoked by an injury, we return violence to our assailant, then we're already defeated. Okay? Another expert, a church leader, we should not grieve when we're defrauded, when we're swindled. Rather, we rejoice as those who have given willingly. We treat it as though we're conferring a favor upon our neighbors rather than merely yielding to necessity. Wow, what an attitude. Another one. The one who doesn't fear to lose their possessions doesn't find it burdensome to give. Otherwise, how will the one with two tunics give one of them to the naked? How else will they offer their robe to one who takes away their tunic? How can we make for ourselves friends with mammon, right, money, wealth, if we love it so much that we cannot bear losing it? Here's another one. And by the way, I'm jumping all over the Mediterranean world. We were in Rome, we were in France, we're in Africa. Now we're in, this is from Istanbul or Constantinople, Turkey. If you give someone what they ask and thereby refrain from being sued, you've sought only your own advantage. But if you give some additional item, you sent him away improved. This is the nature of salt. This is what Jesus wants us to be. For salt not only preserves itself, but it also preserves all other objects with which it comes in contact. So non-resistance is part of our being salt and light. People will see it, and it will affect others. Just a few more. If anyone compels you to go a mile, go with him too. That is so you will follow him not as a slave, but as a free man. And you show yourself to be kindly disposed in all things. This way, you make yourself like the Father, who makes his son rise upon the evil and the good and sends rain upon the just and the unjust. As I have already observed, all these precepts were not the injunctions of one doing away with the law, but of one fulfilling, extending, and widening it. These are all ancient Christian words. You shall not hesitate to give, nor complain when you give. One more. Don't hesitate to give or complain when you do so. Give to everyone who asks of you, and you will know who the good rewarder is. So did the early church really believe in such an unusual doctrine? Well, all of our sources from Europe, Africa, and Asia, it seems, yes, they did. Right, there was no church in the New World, the Western Hemisphere. There was nothing in Australia at that time. But in the Roman Empire, this was the standard. Not to be non-resistant would have made you stand out as a Christian. So what about wrong motives? I always get that question. Well, someone asks you to give, and you're afraid he's going to spend it on alcohol. Well, maybe someone isn't deserving. In the first three applications, when Jesus gives these examples, the persons were not deserving. You know, when someone forces you to carry his pack, right, or someone's striking you on one cheek and so forth, it could be the case in all the instances. I suppose it is. So Jesus is not saying, go the extra mile if the person is a good character. No. And so I'd like to close with some words from Alexander, from Egypt, from Clement of Alexandria. Do not try to judge who's worthy or who's unworthy. For it's possible you may be mistaken in your opinion. By being sparing and trying to test who deserves to receive or not, you may neglect some of those who are loved by God. Right? So friends, remember, God sends his rain down on everybody. It doesn't just rain on righteous people. Everyone benefits. And this is a great segue, a great connection to our next talk, which will be on loving our enemies. So non-resistance is directly connected. Loving our enemies is the last of those six areas of application that Jesus gives us. And we'll also cover the final verse of Matthew 5 on holiness. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Sermon on the Mount K on oaths and non-resistance. Let's put it into practice. Have a fantastic day.